Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week's guest is Chuck Connor, President and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives, who joins us to discuss tariffs, brain drain at USDA, and the potential for ag labor reform this Congress. But first, here's this week's headlines. Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins renamed the Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program to the Advancing Markets for Producers Initiative. Along with the name change, she said all programs receiving funding must provide a minimum of 65% of federal funds to producers. The department encouraged partners to ensure their projects are farmer-focused and reapply to continue work that is aligned with the administration's priorities. According to an analysis by AgriPulse, only 19 of the 82 Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities projects previously analyzed would meet the program's criteria, providing 65% of federal funds to producers. A federal judge has ordered USDA and four other agencies to release money for conservation and energy programs funded by the Inflation Reduction Act and bipartisan infrastructure law. The judge told USDA to resume processing grants already awarded under those laws and to refrain from further freezing, halting, or pausing already appropriated funds. The case involves funding withheld from recipients under President Donald Trump's January 20th Unleashing American Energy Executive Order, including USDA's Regional Conservation Partnership Program and the Urban and Community Forestry Program, among others. The Trump administration is putting a 21% tariff on tomatoes imported from Mexico, effective July 14th. During Trump's first term, his administration negotiated a deal with Mexican tomato growers, where they agreed to sell tomatoes above an agreed reference price that would not undercut American producers. In return, the U.S. did not impose any anti-dumping tariffs. The new administration now says the agreement will end because it has not protected American growers from unfairly priced Mexican imports. This all comes as Senate Democrats, led by Senate Ag Committee Ranking Member Amy Klobuchar, wrote a letter to U.S. Trade Representative Jamison Greer. The group asked for information on how the administration's tariffs will impact American farmers. They argue the tariffs are causing unnecessary uncertainty and harm for American farmers and their markets. Seven other members of the Senate Ag Committee co-signed the letter. Chuck Connor is the president and CEO of the National Council of Farmer Cooperatives. He says the ag industry and NCFC members are feeling the brunt of President Trump's tariffs.
Out in farm country, there's a general sense of giving the president, you know, quite a bit of latitude here to maneuver on this tariff issue and his trade agenda. He's not doing anything that was unexpected or that he didn't campaign on. So, you know, give him a little bit of time there. But I will say that window of time for agriculture is pretty short. And from what I'm hearing from our membership, it's pretty short. This has got to be, you know, quickly in the next 90 days, really wrapped up and pointed towards something that is market development for American agriculture. You know, this can't be about revenues. This can't be about, you know, what other countries are doing. Ultimately, these tariffs have got to be used, you know, to open up markets for U.S. farm products.
And China has been a critical market for farmers over the years. What do you think the long-term impact of these tariffs, especially with China, will be for agriculture?
Well, I think it's going to be substantial, Lydia. I mean, look, there isn't a farmer that I've communicated with, out in farm country that enjoys, you know, the fact that, you know, China is such a huge trading partner for us. We all wish that circumstance hadn't developed, but it has. And you know, for soybeans and grain crops in particular, some of our livestock products, this market is paramount to us. And so, again, while no one disagrees with President Trump that, you know, that he needs to be tougher on China than perhaps what past administrations have, ultimately this has got to get, you know, headed towards a settling out to where China continues to be a big market for agricultural products.
Outside of tariffs, President Trump in a cabinet meeting recently said that farmers will be given some flexibility under the administration's mass deportation policy so that they continue to employ undocumented immigrants. Is that enough certainty to calm the nerves of those in farm country that are very concerned about this mass deportation policy?
Well, I don't know if it's enough, but it certainly was a big step for us getting the president to recognize that agriculture does have a lot of workers. Some estimate as many as a million workers. 50-60% of our workforce consists of those folks who are, don't have the proper documentation to be in this country. As agriculture, supply circumstances, we can't do what we do and provide for America without these workers, Lydia. And so getting the president to recognize that in all of the border enforcement and in all of the deportations that are occurring, that there's going to be maybe special circumstances for these people that are helping us, put food on the table.
And the lack of border security in recent years has been a real barrier to get ag labor reform passed in Congress. Is there any chance that we could see action by lawmakers now that illegal crossings have largely been shut down to have legislative action this Congress?
We certainly hope so. And it has been the reason why we haven't gotten anything passed up until this point. We've really known the solution to our ag labor problems now for many, many years. And it's taken various forms, but ultimately it's the same solution. And so, this is not one of those tough kind of things. What do we do? No, we know exactly what needs to be done. And now hopefully the political circumstances are right with border security being much, much tighter to move forward and again, be consistent with the president's own remarks.
We'll be back with more from NCFC's Chuck Connor right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on, and Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural home buyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
Yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. National Council of Farmer Cooperatives President and CEO Chuck Connor spent part of his career as Deputy Secretary and Acting Secretary at USDA. We asked him what advice he has for Secretary Rollins as she downsizes the department.
Well, certainly we don't know the extent of the buyout effect yet, but what we do believe that there's been several thousand USDA employees accept that buyout. Secretary Rollins, I was with her last week, and she said they're going to be very transparent in terms of releasing that information so that then they can go back to each sort of mission area and see where most of the impact has been and react and respond accordingly. And so, I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt here to give her a chance as the CEO, if you will, of USDA to work through these things and, put together the best possible plan that she can, put together to manage that agency well for all of the various mission areas that it has.
House Ag Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson has said that he's concerned about brain drain at the agency. Is this something that you are concerned about and something that rural America and farmers should also be concerned about?
Yeah, I think it's a legitimate concern. And again, I don't want to be, too forthright until we see the impact, of the buyout circumstance and where those were taken. I will say I hope in that buyout that we haven't lost a lot of the people at the county level, where the sort of retail side, if you will, of USDA is and delivering, goods and services to not only farmers and ranchers, but, all kinds of different people in rural America. It's a very retail agency. It's not a Washington-based agency.
We're looking at a very interesting political climate, and we're still waiting for reauthorization of a new farm bill. Can you kind of describe the state of play of everything regarding reconciliation, the farm bill, and all those pieces, how in your eyes all that may come together to produce some of the farm aid for producers this year?
Well, the farm bill obviously is way past due, Lydia, and that's been frustrating for all of us, because I think for those of us who have been, you know, farm bill aficionados, if you will, the differences we see in this farm bill are small compared to historical standards. They haven't been great, but it's just been very, very difficult politically to sort through this. I actually see some glimmers of hope here. And I'm not sure ultimately what will be the legislative process, whether it will be reconciliation or some other process, but I'm seeing some hope that there may be some flexibility to take dollars, not a lot, but a little bit of dollars from the SNAP program and use those to create, you know, a better Title I, a better farm support system that all of us would, I think, agree has gotten pretty outdated in the current farm bill. And if you can sort of make that, again, relatively minor sort of adjustment, I think that paves the way potentially to actually get this farm bill done over a five-year period.
And you mentioned budget reconciliation as that mechanism to get commodity and crop insurance programs a boost to those. But is there, politically, could there be some challenge actually getting the rest of the full farm bill done? And House Democrats have been very adamant that they do not want to see any cuts to SNAP, to those nutrition programs.
I think it's not easy. I do anticipate that part of the farm bill is likely to be included in the budget reconciliation package, you know, which is mainly all about taxes, which are very, very important to my members and to farmers, but it will also include other budget-related items, and I think some of those items could be farm bill-related, which leaves you, you know, a portion of the farm bill that, you know, is not in the budget reconciliation package and has to be done separately. It's going to be a heavy lift to get that done. You know, this is not a Congress that is going to do a lot of bills, a lot of legislating. They're going to do a few very, very large bills would be sort of my prediction at this point. So getting what in Washington we have now labeled them the orphan farm programs out there that may not have huge budget implications, they're very, very important, but it is going to be hard to get done here before the end of the year. But, you know, we're going to do everything we can to make sure nobody gets left behind in that process.
Wonderful. Chuck, thank you so much for your perspective, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Lydia.
We'll be right back with more of our panel discussion. But first, Andrew Huneke takes a look at the number of H-2A visas filed by fiscal year in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
The H-2A visa program allows agricultural employers to hire foreign workers to fill temporary jobs and is a critical tool for farmers who cannot find enough domestic workers for their production. This chart from the National Council of Agricultural Employers shows the total number of H-2A visas filed by fiscal year from 2014 to 2024. As you can see, the number has gradually risen each year. The most recent numbers show more than 315,000 visas issued in 2024. Farmers have been concerned about President Trump's plans to deport illegal immigrants. According to USDA, roughly 40% of farm workers are undocumented, but the president recently said farmers would be given some flexibility so they can continue to employ illegal immigrants at their operations. The president said farmers could come with a letter petitioning for those workers. They will be able to work for farmers for a short amount of time before leaving the country and returning with some sort of legal work status. It's unclear exactly what that process will look like. However, this does provide farmers with a small bit of assurance they can retain those workers. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Huneke.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line, which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. Dan Hallstrom is president and CEO of the U.S. Meat Export Federation. We asked him how the meat industry is being affected by the tariffs imposed by President Trump.
Specifically into China, our red meat exports, beef and pork, into China have effectively been halted. The current tariff rates for inbound exports of U.S. pork stand at 172%, and U.S. beef stands at about 147%. So obviously that's a situation where when you're one of the higher priced commodities to begin with, these tariffs in effect have us cut back to virtually nothing going in at the moment. And it's not only that, there's some non-tariff trade issues as well. China, about a month ago, failed to renew registrations for about 300 and in excess of 350 beef establishments that were previously approved for China under the Phase One agreement in 2020. So, the duties really don't mean much if you don't have any plants that are approved. So we're really getting hit on both the tariff and non-tariff trade side into China. And just for a little bit of perspective on how big China is for the U.S. beef and pork industries, on the beef side, China accounted about 15% of our exports last year, totaling about $1.6 billion in sales, while pork exports to China were about 13% of our pork exports globally, valued at a little over $1 billion last year.
And Krista, there's a lot of uncertainty out there for row crop producers as well. Can you tell us a little about how your producers are being affected by these tariffs?
Yeah, well, as Dan was just describing, the brunt of the retaliation has been coming from China. And fortunately for corn, China isn't our biggest export destination right now. And so while corn is part of that retaliation, because China was already importing a relatively small amount, the impact of that isn't felt to the extent that we're seeing in some of those other commodities. Now, Mexico is a big concern for us because that is where the bulk of our market share has been, over 40% of our exports of corn going to Mexico. So if we were to see retaliation from Mexico, that is definitely concerning. Similarly, ethanol being an important corn product, Canada is, 40% of our corn exports have gone to Canada in the past year. So again, fortunate to not have seen retaliation on those products from those big destination nations yet, but definitely concerning, and particularly, corn and the rest of the crop sector faces, the outlook for negative margins and just really a tough economic time in general.
Dan, some livestock producers are optimistic that the tariffs will make imported meat expensive enough that Americans will turn to purchasing more U.S.-raised meat products. Are you optimistic that these tariffs could potentially drive domestic demand?
Well, I think without a doubt there's a potential for that, yes. Although, in my opinion, it's a bit inflationary as well on top of that. But yes, I think to answer your question, that will increase the competition, so to speak, that's imported. But I'd like to make one other quick point. In Mexico is a good example on the corn side. Mexico is our largest export market for pork and second largest for beef. And I think that the way that whole, in the last month or so, the way the whole scenario kind of has evolved with Mexico has been very positive. President Sheinbaum in Mexico has handled the whole situation very professionally. And I think likewise, I think the Trump administration has handled it very professionally, because that North American corridor of business is vital, not only to beef and pork, but to agriculture in general.
We'll be back with more of our panel discussion right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Corn growers are hopeful the Trump administration will clear the way for nationwide E15. We asked Krista Swanson with the National Corn Growers Association if nationwide E15 could make up for the loss of export markets.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly can make up for some loss, right? But the other thing we have to keep in mind is that, you know, even when we have nationwide E15, that transition still takes time. That doesn't happen overnight. There is opportunity to utilize more bushels of corn and potentially offset lost markets of that. And so, you know, that is really important to us too. But I will note that it is also really important that we have diversified markets. And so as much as we want to increase our domestic market share, it's certainly something that we're working hard to accomplish. You know, those international markets also really important to keeping a diversified market, overall market for our product.
Krista, before these tariffs went into effect, farm country was already in a challenging economic position. The White House teased this week that farm aid may be being considered. When will we know whether that assistance will be needed?
You know, I think when we think about this trade situation, you know, we're still, a lot has happened. And so much has happened in the past few weeks that, you know, I think we need to remember that we're still really early into this. It's hard to measure impacts at this point. I mean, there are situations where we can measure impacts. Dan described some of that on the meat side. But, you know, as far as how much aid is needed or what is needed or what impacts, I think that's going to take some time, which is the message that we're also hearing from the USDA.
And Dan, when we discuss expanding markets, especially given these tariffs, what countries do you look at as potential new markets for trading partners for U.S. meat products?
That's one of our core strategies, actually, is to diversify to the extent possible so that we're not relying on any one or two countries or regions. And I know the example that everyone uses is China, but really we're looking at it from the perspective the more countries, the better. So the expanding regions, definitely Southeast Asia would stand out, places like the Philippines, Vietnam, through that corridor, Malaysia, Indonesia. We also are looking at Central America and Colombia and South America as key areas that have already actually started to expand. It's not really a target anymore. It's a reality. And of course, the African region in general, a little further out front, but something that we've been looking very hard at the last several years as well.
We'll be back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers. But first, Andrew Hunneke has more on the U.S.'s top ag export sources in this week's Map It Out.
More than 60% of American agricultural exports went to markets in East Asia and North America from 2020 to 2024. This map shows the top 25 countries for American ag exports during that time period. The East Asian market was the largest with a 31% share, led by China, South Korea, and Japan. Some of the top commodities exported to that region include oilseeds, grains, and meats. Next are Canada and Mexico, accounting for a 30% share of exports. The top ag exports to Canada are grains and feed, fruits and vegetables, and meat and other related products. Most of those are also the top export commodities to Mexico, as well as oilseeds. It remains to be seen how the numbers will be impacted by President Trump's tariffs. Trump has imposed tariffs of 145% on Chinese exports, and China has retaliated with tariffs of 125% on U.S. goods. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Weeds, razor-thin margins, supply chain disruptions. American farmers need innovative solutions to tackle the threats that impact us all. Their yield is their livelihood, and the food that feeds our families. That shouldn't be on the line. Which is why the Modern Ag Alliance advocates for access to essential crop protection tools like glyphosate to keep the future of farming in secure, hardworking hands. Get the facts and see what could be at risk.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Next week, both chambers of Congress will be out of session for Easter recess before returning the final week of this month. The annual White House Easter egg roll is Monday. And you can now sign up for this year's AgriPulse Food and Ag Issues Summit in Sacramento, California on June 10th. The event will offer a full day of speeches and panel discussions. Early bird rates are available through May 10th. To sign up, visit the events tab on our website. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.